Well, we have been looking at several weeks all the steps and events that lead up to Christ being crucified. We talked about his Jewish trials, his Roman trials, and all the various things that went on there. We've talked about him on the way to the cross and Simon carrying the cross. And now we are to about 9 o'clock on Friday morning. About 9 o'clock Friday morning is where we are today. And the first thing that we find in these verses, and it's found in all four accounts of the gospel, is they crucified him. And you think that there would be a very long, elaborate, detailed description of that. But that's just what it says. They crucified him. There were all kinds of crosses in the first century. There were X's, ones that looked like an X. There were ones that looked like a capital T. There was ones that looked like a lowercase t. There were numbers of different kinds. One of the clues we have as to the type of cross he was crucified on is found in Matthew chapter 27. So let's turn there for a moment. Matthew 27. And notice, after it says they crucified him, notice what verse 37 says. Matthew 27, verse 37 says this: "And they put up over his head the accusation written against him, 'This is Jesus, the King of the Jews.'" So there was something on the cross above his head so that they could put some sort of writing or whatever you want to call it above his head that said, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." So again, there were a number of different types of crosses, but certainly there had to be on this cross a place for that superscription, I guess is a word for it. The whole ordeal, and we'll talk more about it kind of later, but the whole ordeal of being crucified on a cross like Jesus was certainly one of the most painful types of death that anybody could undergo. And so it really, you couldn't hardly find a more cruel type of death to undergo than what he underwent. But he had prophesied, remember, many times that that's how he would die. I mean, it didn't take him by surprise because he had prophesied himself. Let's just look at a couple of them. Turn back to Matthew chapter 20, 18 and 19. Yeah, he had, and this wasn't the first time he had predicted or prophesied that that's how he would die. There were a number of times and in a number of ways he had said, "This is how I'm going to die." John chapter 12, 32 and 33. So there was just two different places where he indicated that crucifixion was how he would die. So he knew what kind of horrible death that was in his future. So it was no way a surprise. The Bible tells us that he was crucified between two robbers, between two criminals. In Matthew chapter 27, notice verse 38, the very next verse. "Then two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and another on the left." And we'll read more about what these two did and some of their interactions with Jesus. But that was the type of people, not everybody, when they were put to death, were crucified. Usually it was left for the worst type of criminals. So Jesus was crucified certainly between two people who deserved to be there, you know, because of the type of crimes they had committed. And while he was on the cross, he uttered several different statements about several different things. And as time permits, we'll look at some of them. The first statement is found in Luke 23. So we'll look at that one first. Luke 23. This is his first statement from the cross. And by first statement, I mean the first one, of course, we have recorded. Luke 23, verse 34. Luke 23, verse 34. There's the first one we have recorded. He says, "Forgive them, It's the first thing he said. Of course, his death is what would make forgiveness possible. So there's kind of a not a hidden meaning, but there's an additional meaning behind what he says. Because he has to die there, that horrible death, before anybody can be truly forgiven. So he's asking the Father in this very difficult situation to forgive them. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 and 22. So he didn't retaliate, I guess is the point that I want to make. He didn't retaliate in any way. He knew when he came into this world that everything that happened was pointing to him being on the cross in the first place. I mean, he knew that was his destiny. So he knew what was going to happen, and he knew what, you know, was lying ahead for him. And when it actually happens, when he's there on the cross, when he's being crucified, the first thing we have recorded is, "Father, forgive them." We see again, you know, what kind of person, what kind of character he was. You know, it talks about there in 1 Peter 2 about giving us an example. You know, how he suffered and all those things he did. And of course, we have to understand the context, like kind of was brought up, about why he was saying, "Father, forgive them." And I think there's some lessons in there for us as well. But we have to look at everything the Bible says, obviously. Because some people will take the thief on the cross here in a minute and not look at anything else the Bible says about that. So it's always a mistake to look at just one instance and assume we know everything about that topic from one instance. Because like I said, people make some terrible mistakes about the thief on the cross that we'll see in a minute. So we learn that's the first thing we have recorded. And Jesus had taught, remember, at the very beginning of his ministry, remember the Beatitudes that we studied back in Matthew chapter 5? Or started in chapter 5 and then, of course, went on about how we are to treat other people. You know, a lot of the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount is about how we're to treat people. So he was giving us an example on the cross of how to treat people. All right. The Roman soldiers, Carl read this, they divided his garments, they cast lots for them. Okay, they were real concerned about who was dying on the cross, so they took his garments and they cast lots for them. And several of the other accounts include the same thing. So that's what they were doing. They were the ones that were responsible, but this was prophecy. You know what, the Roman soldiers, of course, they didn't know they were fulfilling prophecy. But it was prophesied that would happen. Psalm 22. Let's go back to Psalm 22. And we'll see how this was prophesied. And this psalm is about the Messiah and especially about his suffering. Psalm 22, verse 16 says, "For dogs have surrounded me. The congregation of the wicked has enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They look and stare at me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots." You know, and that was written, you know, 1,500 years or so before the death of Christ. So there was a prophecy, and pretty much that whole psalm is about the Messiah, that they would do that. You know, they would be surrounding Christ, the Messiah, like dogs, like scavengers. And, of course, in the first century, dogs were not pets. They were scavengers. And so he said they're like scavengers. And what are they doing? They're taking one of the last things that I own, that I have, which is, you know, my garments, and taking them and casting lots to see who got them. And he mentioned, again, the piercing of the hands and feet.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's at least half a dozen right there in that one little part of Psalm 22 that talks about how he would die. All the things that would happen. And like I said, that's just one of many, many, many places in the Old Testament that talk about how he would die and where he would die and why he would die. All of those things. All of them. Yeah, that's a. You have to really twist the Bible to not see those. I mean, you have to put blinders on or something. So they, so the soldiers, and again, they had no idea they were fulfilling prophecy, but they were. They were doing exactly what the Old Testament said was going to happen. Now, while he's there, and you can imagine how horrible these soldiers are, because he's there on the cross, excruciating pain from being crucified, and they start hurling abuse at him. So let's just make it even worse. Let's just start, you know, abusing him and mocking him. Let's, if you're still in Luke 23, let's begin in verse 35. Luke 23, verse 35. And the people stood looking on, but even the rulers with them sneered, saying, "He saved others, let him save himself, if he's the Christ, the chosen of God." The soldiers also mocked him, coming and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you're the king of the Jews, save yourself." And an inscription also was written over him in letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, "This is the king of the Jews." Then one of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed him, saying, "If you're the Christ, save yourself and us." I mean, there was, you know, several different groups of people, individuals who were mocking him, sneering at him, making snide remarks, you know, all of these things. Any type of abuse they could think of. And you know what? This was prophesied as well, that people would do that. Let's go to Psalm 69. Psalm 69, verse 21. Oh, this was a part where he asked for vinegar. Psalm 69:21. Go back to verse 20. "Reproach has broken my heart, and I am full of heaviness. I looked for someone to take pity, but there was none, and for comforters, but I found none." And of course, we just saw there weren't. They were hurling abuse at him. "They also gave me gall for my food, and for my thirst they gave me vinegar to drink." There was another prophecy in the Old Testament about Christ. That's a messianic psalm there. And there's more in that chapter as well. Just almost every little thing we have recorded in the New Testament, there's something in the Old Testament that predicted it. Either a psalm or one of the major prophets or one of the minor prophets. Just almost every one of these things was prophesied. Let's, while we're at it, let's read Isaiah 53. That's another one about the Messiah. A few verses there. Isaiah 55, verse 3. Isaiah 53, verse 3. "He is despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." We'll read more verses of that later. But that whole psalm is about Jesus, especially about his crucifixion and his death. And even talks about where he would be buried. I think it's important that we look at all of these prophecies about Jesus and how they were fulfilled. And those psalms were written, you know, at least 1,000 years before Christ, some 1,500 years before Christ. So there was a long, long period between when it was prophesied and when it was fulfilled. It's not like someone today prophesying that is going to come out number one here in 2 or 3 weeks. Well, that's not a prophecy, you know. But when you prophesy, say that something is going to happen in such a way and give details 1,000 years before it happens, and then it happens exactly like you say, that wasn't an accident. That wasn't chance. That was real. That was a real prophecy. One of the criminals, we read in verse 39, said, "If you're the Christ, save yourself and us." If you're the Anointed One, if you're the Messiah, save yourself and save us. Well, his whole purpose, as someone said earlier, was to come and die. I mean, that was his whole point in coming to the earth. So that if he didn't save him, if he saved himself from the cross, then he would nullify his whole point in coming to the earth. So what this criminal was asking him to do was directly opposite of his whole mission. His mission was to die and to save the world. So by him dying, he was saving us. That's how he saved us, by him dying. So he couldn't save himself and us at the same time. That couldn't happen. He had to die to save us. Prophecies are. That's one of the greatest evidences for the inspiration of the Bible and for Jesus being the Messiah. All right. Well, thank you for all your comments today.